So first off, actually tomorrow is my grandmother's yahrzeit. So we always learn Lilui Nishmasa, but I usually at this point don't say anything. But dafka her this week. So her neshama should have an aliyah.
Amen.
I've said many, many times, so I won't go in more than this, but I owe so much of who I am to my grandmother on so many different levels. So I'm certainly grateful, and our learning should continue to make her proud. And obviously, refuah shleima for all those injured and a speedy return for all those that are captured. I got the parsha right this week. I just got the year wrong, but hopefully by next week we'll get them both right. So the parsha, obviously, besides being Sorli's bar mitzvah parsha, is the introduction. Say all those years davening at Hagler, I don't forget. Besides that, it's the introduction really of the Jewish people. Even though Avraham Avinu wasn't necessarily, really Jewish, obviously being Jewish comes from Yehudi, which means that you need Yehuda, and that's not going to be for several generations. But Avraham Avinu is quite a important figure in not only our lives, but certainly in the lives of many people on planet Earth. He potentially touches so many of the different religions. If you accept the fact that his the B'nai Keturah were sent out west to India, you really like you start including them as well. You really like have huge, huge chunks of planet Earth that are tied to him. But obviously, we focus on the fact that Avraham Avinu is our forefather. And so tonight I want to take a look at a brief episode in Avram's life. And we've probably looked and discussed it several times over the years. But I want to try taking a new approach to it. And the overarching question that Rabbi Sacks addresses in it, which we'll probably do more as an afterthought at the end, is were the Avos perfect? Now, there is somewhere on my Excel spreadsheet, which we'll probably never do, is the topic, did the Avos keep the mitzvos? And that's probably also around one of these parashios. But I think that the two of them are interconnected. Is the question is, like, how do we look at the Avos, and can we be so brazen as to say that the Avos made mistakes? And obviously, it depends on who your audience is. This is a relatively forgiving audience. And so over the years, the things that have been suggested at the Chabura probably were more extreme than we could get away with in some circles, and obviously less extreme than we could get away in others. But I think that the question that Rabbi Sacks asks is a question that we have to kind of always tiptoe on. On the one hand, the Avos are the Avos. So to say that they're, to compare them to us and to try to, insert our own shortcomings into them is a dangerous step. On the other hand, they're human beings. And so that's a question that I want to kind of address a little bit at the end. But in the meantime, let's take a look at this story. So the story starts off, Hey Rav Ba'aretz, Vayered Avram Mitzrayimah. There was a famine in the land. Now, just context on this, Avram had just arrived in the land of Israel. He was not there for all that long. He started up north, went down south. He's doing his whole sivuv, or I guess you can't call it a sivuv because he's not going a circle. He's doing his whole line, and he gets down to the southern part of Israel, and there's no food. So what does he do? So he goes from there, and he goes down to Egypt because the Ra'av is heavy in the land. Now, if you take a look at the Svarno, so the Svarno points out, Lagur Sham is V'lo. He goes to, I think we translated in the Haggadahs, sojourn. He goes to live there for a little bit of time. This is not meant to relocate permanently to Egypt. He's simply there for a little bit. I'm not sure. There's probably so many videos going around and things like that. It's hard to know who saw what. But there was a chayal that did a bit, I think, this week or the end of last week, where he contrasted you know, you have a hope, you have a house versus a home. He says a house is something that's transient. I live there. If someone offers me the right price, I'm willing to leave. If someone offers, if the neighborhood goes down, you know, it's not what it used to be, I leave. But a home is something that is forever. You can't leave a home. You can't sell a home. And I think that's really essentially what Avram is doing. Avram is going, Lagur Sham, he's building a house in Egypt, but he's not building a home there. He's going to be there temporarily. How long temporarily is a great question. The Jews were in Egypt temporarily. They stayed there for 210 years. So that's a pretty long time. But the plan was never to live there. It was simply to stay there until they were allowed to leave. When he gets close to Egypt, he says, you know, I just realized that you're a beautiful woman, which probably is not good advice for a husband, to be married for a very, very, very long time and then all of a sudden wake up one day and look at their wife and say, gee, you know what? We've been married for, I don't know, 50 years. It just struck me for the very first time. You're actually an attractive woman. Probably not such a good idea. So, but he recognizes it. And Rashi obviously is bothered by where this is coming from 50 years into his marriage. Maybe he got married later than 25, maybe 30 years into his marriage. He's been married long enough. Why is this the first time? So Rashi says that he was going to Egypt, which is a land of ugly people or non-attractive people. I mean, it's a nicer way to say it. And he recognizes that amongst those women, she's going to stand out much more. And therefore, this whole conversation comes from there. Okay, so the first question that we have to address so far is, why does Avram go down to Mitzrayim? And that's, I think, that's a pretty overarching question that we have to deal with. And the second question is, was that okay? Was it all right to go to Egypt? So I want to stop for a moment and put that question out. Was it okay to go to Egypt? What are your thoughts? Okay, so that's certainly one side of it, which I guess is tied into Srili's no, but Shmuel says, yeah, he should have had emunah and bitachon that everything would have been okay in Israel.
I guess the question from is that...
You're not saying you agree with that. You're saying, is that the type? Okay, so that's a possibility, okay? So, anybody else?
I'm going to say Parv. Meaning that the Emunah Bitachon, he doesn't necessarily at this point know the boundaries of it. And so, so it's one thing when to say that, sacrifice your son, but that's later. He's just beginning to really have this very close relationship. Who is he to expect that Hashem is going to take care of him, 100% of the time, all the time, no matter what. And in fact, you use that thought, if you expect to be taken care of, then what happened to Sarah children should not have happened.
Okay. Right. I mean, I guess even besides the fact that Steve's questioning, like, the development of Avram's Emunah and Bitachon, I think Emunah and Bitachon often are balanced out by hishtadlus. What do I have to do versus what do I believe? If there's no food and and I stay where I'm staying, I don't know. Like, is that a good move? People could have tremendous emunah. There are definitely people in Israel down south that have tremendous emunah, but they've been evacuated. Some because they're within 3-4 miles of Gaza and therefore they're legally mandated to leave. And then there are those that live farther out that have made the decision to leave, even though they're not being told that they have to leave. Why? Because sitting in a place where rackets are falling is not really necessarily the smartest of things. But you should believe that God will make the rackets not hit your house. No, you should have hishtad. Sometimes you have to do it. You're hishtadlus. So how does that balance itself out? So I think that's part of the question is it okay to leave? So if you have emunah, okay, so what are you doing? God is going to provide. But on the other hand, if you have hishtadlus, your hishtadlus might be, don't stay there. Well, there's no food. So which one is it? Kevin, you look like you have something on your mind, but I could be wrong.
Me?
Yeah.
Well, you know, like the stories of Histalis versus Amuna, there's a flood and the guy goes up to his roof and a robo comes by, get in. No, no, I'm waiting. And then whatever comes by and six different apparatus come by and he finally dies. He goes up to Shemayim. He's like, how come you didn't save me? He goes, I sent you a boat, a helicopter, this, that. You didn't get in. What are you waiting for?
Right, so that's the extreme end where you say like Hishtandus is to leave. But then the question is like, if God is telling you go to the land, how long do you have to stay there and wait? So those are all questions that I think we balance out the dilemma of was it okay to leave. Okay, so let's hold off on those. Those are still our two questions: why did Avram go to Egypt, and was it okay to leave? So meanwhile, they're having this conversation about her being a pretty woman. He says, listen, I'm a little bit nervous that maybe the Egyptians will see you. They'll ask and they'll say that I'm the husband, and they'll say, can't marry a married woman, so they'll kill me so that they could let you live and marry you. Why don't we just say that you're my sister? In order to say good will happen to me because of you, and we'll all live, okay, and I'll live because of you. And when Avram comes to Egypt, and they see that she is beautiful, and the officers of Paro see her. And they praise her all the way to Paro. So either it means that they said to Paro, there's this new woman that came to town and she is only befitting a king. Or another possibility is that it's just like that's all the conversation that's going on. Oh, wow. Did you see her? Oh, yeah. Wow. She is stunning. And then eventually talk reached Paro's throne. Tukach isha beit Paro. And the woman is taken to the house of Paro. Batukach, she's taken, meaning that this is against her will and it's under duress. And that's why really, like, even though never does Avram say really that they'll want you to be their wife, but they'll abduct you. I think that that's like, you know, when we're younger, we read the Chumash as, you know, you'll become one of their wives, but that's actually not really true. If they were to take her, it would be under duress, and therefore, it'd be kidnapping and rape. Okay, so that is our story. The last question I want to ask on this is what's the test of this story? Right, is the test of the story, do you believe in God, and therefore, even though God told you to go to the land of Israel, you're not going to the land of, you're not staying in the land of Israel, you're going down to Egypt? Or is the test, you know, going to Egypt, or is there another piece to the test? So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Rav Ba'aretz, Bo Ta'aretz Levada. The only place that had a famine was this land. Linasoto, to test him, im yahar her acharav dvar shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu shamar lelechet el eretz Kanan v'achshav masio latzeit mimenu. The test is, will he question God who told him, come to Eretz Kanan, it's an amazing land, and then he gets there and it turns out not to be so amazing in the moment, and he has to leave to go to Egypt. Now, according to Rashi, then, did he do anything wrong by leaving Canaan?
No,
he was supposed to leave Canaan. According to Rashi, did he pass the test?
Yes.
With flying colors. The question was, would he have any questions on God about going to Egypt? He doesn't have any questions. The whole Sarah sister-wife thing is just it's a ploy to keep himself alive and safe. So according to Rashi, he didn't do anything wrong. Nothing at all. So let's take a look at the Bechor Shor.
The same test could have existed by living in famine. He didn't have to leave. He could have, the suffering of being in Canaan during a famine, after God told you to go to this great land, is the exact same test.
Correct. But Rashi adds in, because of Rashi's last four words, Rashi is saying that leaving Canaan was
was part of the test.
Right. You could disagree with Rashi. If you're going to say that he did something wrong, you're going to say the question was im yaharher achara. If you wanted to write, right, Peir Sruli would be l'nasoto to test him im yaharher achara v'var shal kodesh baruch hu sh'amar l'alechet al arza kanan v'achshav ein ochel. V'achshav yesh rav. Right? Not masi'o. Let's take him out of that. He's forced to leave there. Okay. So that's Rashi, but Rashi makes it clear that there really is no problem. Avraham did everything right. Test was, you just got to Canaan, that's where God wanted you to be, and you're willing to get up and leave, and no questions on God at all. Okay, let's take a look at the Bechor Shor quickly. The Bechor Shor answers the question, why does Avraham go to Egypt? Now, according to Rashi, why does he go to Egypt? That's the test. Are you willing to leave Israel to go to Egypt? Egypt is one of the closest countries if you're in southern Israel. So the Bechor Shor gives a much simpler and straightforward answer. Ein derech sham ra'av liyop, right? There's not generally famine in Egypt. I did when I was teaching at some point, third grade or fifth grade, I don't remember which one. I was curious, like, how much rain does Egypt get? Because we say that Egypt is, like, fed by the Nile. I was curious, like, I don't know, we live in Israel. Israel gets, like, a decent amount of rain. I mean, not like some of the places that, you know, we might be familiar with. But Israel, like, I don't know, you know, how high is the Kinneret? So a good year, I guess a lot of rain in Egypt is, like, about an inch the whole year. So that's obviously a lot less rain than you get here in Israel. That not having rain doesn't really matter in Israel. Why? And sorry, in Egypt, because the Nile feeds the land. So it's a safe bet to go to Egypt. Egypt is fed by the Nile, not fed by God through the rain. Okay, at least that's the way they view things in Egypt. We'll say that they're fed by God through the Nile. Okay, so that's Bechor Shor. But we still have the question, was it okay to leave? Rashi says, yes, it was not only okay to leave, that was the purpose of the test, was to leave. Let's take a look at the Ramban. The Ramban, it's not a short one, but it's a good one. So the Ramban says the following. It says, Vahirab ba'aretz hinei Avram yarad l'mitzrayim m'vnei arav l'agur sham l'achayot nafsho b'meyab tzoret. So what happens? He goes down there to live through this drought. For no reason whatsoever, they take advantage of him. And God takes vengeance on them by striking them with disease. And they leave with great, he leaves, Avram leaves with great wealth. And Paro sends out a honor guard to take them to the border, or a protective guard to take them to the border. And Hashem kasher amar v'chol bat chayun. So, and this is actually, this is foretelling what's going to happen in the future. That the Jews are going to come down because of Arav. They're going to come there, lagur sham, to be there temporarily. And the Mitzrim will try to take their wives, kolabat techayun, v'kodesh baruch hu yinkom nikmatam b'negayim gdolim, and there'll be great plagues that will befall the Egyptians. Achi yotzim b'kesef v'zahav etzon v'akar m'knei kaved mod, v'chaziku b'ayim l'shalcham min aretz, and they send them to the border, get out quickly. Lo nafal davar mikol mura av sholi avavanim. Nothing that happened to the father didn't happen to the sons. Okay, we have a basic concept for that. It's called Masavot Siman Lebanim. That if you read Sefer Bereishis, whatever happens to our avos, it happens to us as well. V'ainyan azeh pirshu b'Bereishit Rabbah. And this was addressed in Bereishis Rabbah. Reb Pinchas b'shem Reb Oshia Amar. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Avram, tzeik vosh et haderach lefnei banecha, v'ata motzei kol ma shekatu b'Avram katu b'banav. God says to Avram, listen, you're going to pave the way. Whatever you do will happen to your children. Avram katu vayirab be eretz Yisrael k'tiv kizesh na time rab be karav aretz. There's also a famine later on in the times of Yaakov. Veda, this is the key part. So, okay, if you weren't following 100%, this is where you got to make sure you listen carefully. Ki Avram avinu chata chet gadol bishkaga. By accident, Avram committed a terrible sin. Shehivi ha'ishto atzadeke v'michshal avon, that he put his wife in harm's way. Mipnei pachado, because of his fear. Pen yargu v'yalu l'vtoach b'shem she'atzil oto v'tishto v'kol asher lo. And he should have had faith that God would save him, his wife, and all that was his. Ki yesh b'elokim koach la'azor la'tzil. That God has the power to save. So really, the Ramban is starting off by saying that even if he went down to Egypt, what should have been his plan been? She's my wife. And this is gam yitziyato min ha'aretz shenitztav elav b'tchila b'mnei ha'rav avon asher chatak yelukim b'rav yiftenu mimaves. God has the ability to feed us even in times of famine. So he says that this is punishment. Because he left the land of Israel, his children have to go to Egypt, suffer there as a way of getting judgment upon them. Okay, that's a pretty strong statement of the Ramban. Ramban is basically saying if Avram had held pat, the Jews would have also been fine and they would never have to go to Egypt in the first place. Okay. So, before we ask any questions, I just want to share with you a different Ramban. And then after that, I hope we'll be able to, you know, understand the Ramban a little bit better, although I think there are a lot of questions on the Ramban. The story at the end of the parasha is that Sarai can't have any children still, and it bothers her. So she says, hey, maybe Avram should marry Hagar. And Hagar has children with Avram, or gets pregnant. Maybe gets pregnant multiple times, even just in our parasha, not including the B'nai Keturah. And Hagar then becomes a little bit haughty. Sarah is really upset. She comes and complains to Avram. Avram says, do whatever you want. And the pasuk then says, Sarai makes her suffer and she runs away. Says the Ramban, okay, also the Ramban, he says, our mother Sarah sinned because of what she did. And Avram also, by allowing her to do this, right, one is, you know, one is active and one is passive, but they're both wrong. God listens to her cries, gives her a son. And this wild man will inflict great harm on Avram and Sarah and their children because of this. What the Ramban is saying is that in his time, radical Islam, which was radical in his time, was a direct punishment of Parshas Lech Lecha. Ramban takes Avram and Sarah pretty hard and pretty much to task. There's a lot of questions we could ask on this. First of all, is that really fair? I mean, that's pretty harsh. Avram takes his family in the midst of famine, and because of that, hishtadlus, right? He ends up suffering for all those years. Sarah puts her slave in her place, and for that we have to suffer at the hands of Yishmael for all these thousands of years. It's hard to believe that. But also at the end of the parasha we have Bris Bein Absarim, and it seems like in Bris Bein Absarim the idea is that the Jews are going to have to be slaves somewhere. That's part of becoming a nation. So why is that tied into this story? And also, here's another one. Generally, the idea is that if I'm punished for something that has been done in previous generations, how many generations back does punishment go to?
Three.
So is it three? Is it four? I think it's four.
Four.
Right. The fourth generation suffers as a result of that. Rashi even points out that the Jews are in Egypt just long enough that Miyotzei Mitzrayim are four generations later. That's four generations from Yaakov. So that, what is that? I guess that's seven generations from Avram. So it's not fair. We suffer for three generations longer. But certainly Yishmael, how many generations past Sarah are we? We're still suffering at the hands of Yishmael. It just doesn't seem right. So why does the Ramban say this? So there's a possibility that you could suggest, which Rabbi Sacks says, which is fascinating. The Ramban lived at a time in the 1100s in Spain, which is where he started, where radical Islam was very, very, very strong. He suffered at their hands. Is it possible that the Ramban's pshat, which puts the onus of our suffering for so long at the hands of Yishmael, does his own life experience perhaps shape his feelings? And that's why he's saying, we're suffering. Why? His drasha to the Jewish people is, look, this one action that Tsar Imenu did has reverberations for so many generations. So I was curious. The Abarbanel has a very long comment. We would have needed another page, full page for the Abarbanel. At the famous joke, right, that a person became an apikoros because he learned the Abarbanel on Friday night. What happened? He'd read the first page with all the questions. He'd fall asleep before he got all the answers. And by the end of Shabbos, he didn't believe in God. Right, so that's unfortunately, that's like the Abarbanel is tough that way. So I cheat. I just look at the pasuk. I want to know what the Abarbanel says on. And then it says, V'kan hutra sheila yud bet. So his 12th question on the beginning of Lech Lecha is, was it so bad that Avram left? He quotes the Ramban, and he rejects the Ramban and said Avram did not do anything wrong at all. The interesting thing is, where did the Abarbanel live? He lived in Spain. He was actually exiled from Spain in 1492. It's interesting. I think I've said this before. He was the finance minister of Portugal, brought them to their financial heyday. They were exiled. He went to Spain, brought them to their financial heyday. He was exiled. And then he went to Italy and brought them to their financial heyday. So anybody that could like kick the Abarbanel out seems to be pretty stupid. So maybe the Italians learned that at least in his lifetime, the Jews were okay there. But the Abarbanel did not suffer at the hands of radical Islam. In fact, Islam was pretty quiet and peaceful in his times. Whose hands does he suffer at?
Christians.
Right. So it's not shocking that the Abarbanel is a little bit more, it doesn't have the same passionate and aggressive knack on the people of Yishmael. So it's just interesting that the Mefarshim, as much as you want to think that they look objectively at the Psukim, it's not really true. They look at the Psukim through the lens that they're living in, which is really not any different than we are. In fact, this chabura has been in It's been in the waiting list for quite some time. It just keeps getting kept getting pushed down, but then you read something like this in a year like this, and it feels like the right message to hear. Whereas,
did you read the right question? Because you said, did Avram do the wrong thing by going down to Mitzrayim? And you looked at what the Abarbanel said. The question really should be about Sarah and her treatment of Hagar. That's the one that's related to Yishmael, not going to Mitzrayim.
Correct. So the Ramban's attack, meaning, the Rabbi Sacks addresses it in the grand scheme of, you know, Avram and Sarah's actions and whether you can have problems on them. I hear what you're saying. What would the Abarbanel say? Did I look at the Abarbanel on Vatana Sarah? No, I didn't.
Right.
But it seems like the Abarbanel rejects the whole approach that Avram did anything wrong. It's good.
Well, you can also tie it in. Wasn't Hagar a mitzvah?
Hagar is a mitzvah, and it's actually interesting.
He only met her because he went down to Mitzrayim in this one.
Right, so she's her. She's connected to both Mitzrayim and to Yishmael. Okay, So the question really is, which one is right? Did Avram do anything wrong? So the answer is, it depends. If you want to accept the Ramban, then he in fact he did something wrong. If you want to accept Rashi, he did nothing wrong. But I want to end with just touching upon whether the Avos are perfect or not. So they're not perfect and they're not divine. In fact, the unique quality of Judaism is that, unlike the contemporary cultures of when Judaism came about and subsequently afterwards, we don't pretend that our leaders are divine. Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest human being to ever live, was human. Moshe Rabbeinu has at least one or two sins on the book that we see. Why? Because we're not supposed to be perfect. And he then says that, I thought this was amazing. He says that when we're young and we learn Chumash, it's very black and white. Heroes, villains. It's never a question, right? Paro is bad, Avram is good. But he says as we get older and we read them again, it actually should not be so simple. Black and white is no longer the way to describe the Chumash, but it's really more gray. They're no longer just heroes and villains, but people become more sophisticated and more complex. And he says it's very important that we ourselves, as we learn more, we do that. It's not the Chabura anniversary, so I don't have to get like wax poetic, but it's almost, right? But to me, one of the things that I'm so grateful to the Chabura, this is 16 years or something like that, 17 years, I don't know, it's been, I guess Ozzy is already 16, so we're starting the 17th year of the Chabura, God willing, in 2 weeks. But these are questions that when I learned them 17, 18, 19 years ago, everything was black and white. And what the Chabura forced me to do is to look at the Chumash with a much more sophisticated lens. And you end up having a lot more dimensions of gray as opposed to everything being black and white. And even the bad people, even in this story, did Paro do anything wrong in this story? I don't know. It's hard. Okay, so Paro was lustful, but she was a single woman in his mind. Did I really do anything wrong? So the bad characters have their positive pieces sometimes, and the good characters have their negatives. I'll end just with what Rabbi Sacks ends his by saying, is that we're created B'Tselem Elokim. We did that last week, the week before. No one holds humans in higher regard than Judaism. But also, Judaism holds us responsible. There's no caste system where the strong are allowed to oppress the weak. But even the greatest of people, even the greatest of leaders, are called to task for anything that they do wrong. And I think that that's really, a very powerful message of this story. Yes, the Ramban might have been impacted by the life that he lived in the areas that he lived in. It's true. But nonetheless, what you see from the Ramban and from others is that Avram Avinu, as great as he is, B'Tselem Elokim, big, big tzaddik, nonetheless, he's held to task as a human being because we are responsible for our actions. And I think that that is a very, very powerful message that Judaism shares with the world. Humanity is important. They're godly, but they're not gods. And humanity will always be responsible for its actions. Have a great Shabbos.